Welcome to Black People Love Paramore, a podcast to try to help Black people feel seen. Please feel free to donate to the show at the link in the show notes and rate us and write us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. 5 stars only because we are 5-star bitches. Word to Yo Gotti. I'm your host, Sequoia. And I know you see the title today. I know you see it. But before we get to that, I have a housekeeping thing I want to mention. I have officially launched the Patreon, y'all, okay? Gone on over to patreon.com/blackpeoplelovepairmore, and you will find exclusive content, you will find some goodies, you'll find access to the Discord, the community that we'll be chatting in, you will find an opportunity to be on the show, you'll find a lot of stuff over at Patreon, so go check that out, let me know your thoughts. Now that that's out of the way, guess what? You don't even have to guess because I know that you know, because I know that you saw the title. And yes, that is real. I interviewed Hayley Williams. Hayley Williams, that Hayley Williams, not any Hayley Williams, not just a lady named Hayley Williams, that Hayley Williams for this podcast, y'all. I am so grateful and excited for y'all to hear it. First of all, I couldn't have gotten here without y'all. Thank you for listening. You made this possible. Now I'm gonna shut up. I'm just gonna let y'all hear it. Check out the interview with me and Hayley for Black People Love Paramore. So the premise of this podcast is helping Black people feel seen. So we talk about different topics, niches, and ideas that large groups of Black people like that mainstream media doesn't necessarily associate with Black people.
Yeah.
Like Paramore,
of course.
So I am so excited. If you're not watching this, you'll recognize the voice to have the Hayley Williams joining me today.
It's me a day after a show with a very low growl.
I mean, you never know. The voice sounds pristine per usual.
You.
Yeah, 100%.
Thank you.
So I'm going to ask you a few questions.
Okay.
We'll just jump into it if that's cool with you.
I'm so excited. I'm ready.
Okay, cool. And if I'm looking down at my notes, it's just because
I'm not good.
Super professional with
no,
this.
No, you so. Are pro. That is what I would be doing.
Thank you so much. Okay. When did you realize that you and Paramore at large had a large Black fan base?
I would say it started to change with the self-titled album.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like 2013 when that record came out. And that was also the first album that Taylor and I started writing everything kind of as a duo. We had, you know, like Paramore fans that grew up with us will remember we lost, you know, Zach and Josh mm-hmm. at that point. Zach ultimately came back to the band 6 years later. But for this record, it was just Taylor and I. And Taylor and I grew up, I think, out of everyone in the band, we grew up listening to just generally more music that was groovier. And that's not really excluding Zach, because Zach was a drummer, so he was always kind of magnetized towards groove and mm-hmm. stuff. But as far as being primary songwriters, it was like the focus kind of tilted. And it wasn't so much about trying to stick into one particular style of music. It was like, how do we push the margins of this a little bit and also infuse what we really enjoy, which was like kind of dancing and bobbing our heads in this way. Like songs like That's What You Get, How to Groove to Them, and, yep. and other songs that are on prior records. So self-titled had more of that. Like Ain't It Fun was part of it. I'm like a really big fan of like New Jack Swing type beats.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime Taylor will give me something swingy,
mm-hmm.
it sort of sends my writing brain into this other space.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course we asked a local gospel choir from here in LA to come and sing on it. And that was my first time since living in Mississippi, being able to be in the room with a bunch of Black singers, like people who just, that is their every single day,
yeah.
harmonies, you know, like technique, all of it. And I just was geeking out so much. I feel like something in us really came alive on that record that we hadn't gotten to previously show. And I feel like that also attracted people who either weren't into the band before mm-hmm. or maybe didn't really feel like they had a place at our shows, you know?
Yep.
So from then on, you know, after Laughter, we talked about it all the time during that record because we spent a lot of time focusing on the Talking Heads. And the Talking Heads have Stopped Making Sense, this concert film. And when you look out at their crowd, it's so diverse. And I would just like tear up watching it. And by the end of After Laughter, I felt like our crowds looked like that.
Yep.
And I was like, this is it. I'm living out a fantasy. This is crazy. And it just keeps growing and it keeps expanding. So I'm so thankful, man, too. It's just, there's such a huge part of me that grew up on Black music.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to share something that's almost like you can't really even put it into words with the fans that do come to the shows that also feel that and see that,
right,
is so special to me.
Right. You touched on this a little bit, but just to give the opportunity for you to expand if you would like to.
Sure.
I know you grew up in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
That lets me know that you probably had some proximity to Black church folks, yes, and gospel music.
Yes.
How has that impacted your music in particular? The grooviness, like you mentioned before?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think too, never separating how much music is a soul experience, yeah, you know, like to really understand music, you know, growing up and kind of course, I went to a church that was like a Southern Baptist church when I was a kid, and it was the music just would put me to sleep, you know, like,
oh, no.
I mean, just truly. And but my granddad was really, he loved Motown and he loved gospel. So I feel like I got a nice education at home from that. And then there was a certain age where I started singing with a friend, and we went around to some different churches in town, and we sang at a couple churches that were predominantly, if not entirely, Black. And I felt, again, it's not really something that I think is, it's not even worthy of words. It was just like a feeling of, oh man, I don't have to temper my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to, you know, stand perfectly still and sing some of this stuff. Even if you're singing about God or whatever, it's a soul experience.
Right.
And so that was my upbringing with gospel, and I do think that also it just gave me such a love for singers. And like Whitney, when she says, like, I rarely listen to people who cannot sing.
Yes,
you know,
very much that.
I feel like I got such a cool education growing up on like great singers.
I love that. You singing at a predominantly Black church or just like around, it tracks so hard.
Oh my that God. That could have just been, you know, if that was my life's trajectory, I think I'd have been fine with that.
I love that, right?
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's such an explosion of feelings and
yeah,
connection too. It's really special.
Yeah. And I noticed you move around a lot on stage, so
yeah,
that definitely makes sense.
How
it's like,
can you stand still?
Yeah.
I mean, even some of my favorite singers, like, I mean, I'm thinking about Whitney a ton right now because I just finally watched the I Want to Dance with Somebody film.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like she did a really good job kind of encapsulating some of those performances. I don't know everything that went into that film, so I'm a little bit ignorant. But I was thinking about how many moments in Whitney's career that were so explosive vocally, but she was standing kind of still.
So still.
It's like, how do you do it?
How are you doing it?
I mean, that's power, because I can't.
Absolutely.
I can't do
Can't
that.
Relate. No,
no,
I definitely will be moving,
relate.
Truly. But I mean, I can't sing at all, so of course I can't relate. Bring your forward to today.
Okay.
Have any Black musicians had you in a chokehold lately in particular?
Actually, 2 days ago, I discovered, is it Flyana Boss?
That sounds right. I don't know how to pronounce it, but I do know the duo that you're speaking about.
Obsessed.
Uh-huh. They're great.
Obsessed with them.
Yes.
And also, I recently heard some Thundercat demos.
Yes.
That I'm really excited about that are going to be on an upcoming project. So,
yeah.
I mean, Flyana Boss, though, if that's how you say it,
mm-hmm,
really surprised me because I don't get on social media that much, mm-hmm, but I had to download Instagram recently to delete my Finsta.
No.
I had to get rid of it. And for some reason, while I was on it and whatever I was on,
mm-hmm,
one of their like viral videos where they're running,
yep,
came on. I was like, who the fuck is this group? And so good. I'm really excited to kind of catch on to them.
They're magical.
They do. Yeah.
I love watching their running videos.
Yeah,
it's very
the
fun.
Style too. The whole thing. They
yeah,
just have the whole thing.
Yeah.
I gotta track them down.
Certainly. I mean, now that's a good segue too.
Okay.
Is there one Black music artist that you would love to collab with?
Oh, okay. Well, it's been SZA for a long time.
Okay. Okay.
Because I love her voice and I just feel like, but also, oh man, there's too many, to be honest with you, because I was saying recently to someone, because we grew up in the scene that we grew up in, I rarely get asked to do features for things that I feel like really get down to my core.
Yeah.
So I'm still like keeping my eye out for whether that be new artists,
mm-hmm,
or, you know, maybe it's older established artists, but probably people who do groovier shit, like
yeah,
something that I can sink down into a little bit instead of having to just be, I guess, the misery business version of myself that I'm
fair,
sure a lot of people, that's what they probably want when they want the feature. But Anyway, yeah, SZA has for about 6 years now been the one, and I'm sending the text weekly at this point.
I love it. No, I love that. I saw your cover of Drew Barrymore.
Oh, thanks.
And it's fantastic. Of course.
God.
What's your favorite SZA song?
Oh, Garden, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Garden's my favorite song by SZA. But, you know, also, all of her records just kind of, like, there are records you can put on and no skips for
Definitely.
Me.
Definitely. Straight through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Consistent. Mm-hmm. I like that about her as well.
Hi. This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of perfect pitch, the history of pride flags, and speedrunning video games. Any questions? Ah, yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else.
My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
You've mentioned you love Lil Wayne when you were growing up.
Yes.
What's your favorite Lil Wayne song?
Okay, well, my intro to hip hop as a kid was like Cash Money.
Uh-huh.
So, and a lot a of just like, intro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like Southern hip hop. And that just time period was so cool. I mean, I feel like I got lucky with what I was introduced to. So it's not even just so much Lil Wayne, but it's like Hot Boys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like his verse on like Number One Stunna. And Number One Stunna was probably my favorite song
when I
played basketball.
I love this.
So, but it's crazy too because Lil Wayne was so young. And I was like a kid from Mississippi that knew in the back of my head I wanted to do music someday.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, he's tiny and he's doing this shit.
It's
gotta be possible.
Definitely.
So even though I knew that was not gonna look like my career at all, it gave me some sense of hope. I feel like that's why I probably have brought him up before.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, Number One Stunner though. I mean, I know it's not a Lil Wayne song, but the feature
is to me. So
yes.
Absolutely. I feel that as well. You've previously said you first dyed your hair orange because you wanted to be an anime version of yourself.
Oh, yes.
Do you have a favorite anime?
Oh, do I have a favorite anime? Well, I've watched a lot of Dragon Slayer.
Okay.
As of late. And I don't even know if like people who are really into anime, like do people call that anime? I don't know. I feel
I
like
don't
a poser.
Watch anime at all.
Okay.
So
well, that makes me
whatever,
feel.
And I would believe you. So go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I'm anime light. But when I was like right before I dyed my hair and Riot came out, we had just gone to Japan too. So I also have this, there was this huge influx of like Japanese culture and, you know, Harajuku street style.
Yep.
All that shit, Fruits Magazine,
yep.
That was like, it like flooded my everything, my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that touched Japanese culture, I was like, well, why don't we express ourselves like that here? Like,
yeah.
Why don't I feel comfortable just walking down the street, wearing whatever I want with my hair, however. So I tried to start infusing that into my life.
Right.
That courage.
Right.
And it really set me up for a good time.
Listen, that yes. courage did what it needed to do, certainly. As a white woman who makes alternative rock music,
yes.
What has been the process for getting comfortable coming on a podcast like this and discussing matters of race? Because I'm sure it can't be super easy.
Oh, man. Well, I will say one of the best gifts for me that was actually during the pandemic was that we weren't on tour and that all of the news, whether it was George Floyd's murder, whether it was marching in the street with like local community, I got to experience that not as a singer of a band, but mm-hmm. as like a person from Nashville, a member of my own community.
Right.
And I think that that was also my first adult experience living in my hometown by myself in my own house.
Right.
Kind of, you know, trying to learn and relearn and unlearn all these things at the same time. And I'm so grateful that, I mean, the band still existed and all of that stuff. And there's that lens that I'm sure is permanent for me. But I really, I didn't have that stuff to fall back on to like make it a little bit more cushioned, you know? And so I had a lot of uncomfortable moments during that time mm-hmm. that were very insular. And then I got so angry about everything. I mean, anything that you see on the news is pretty much inflammatory, especially when it comes to race,
absolutely.
Especially if you're living in the South. And so came out of that season knowing that whatever we do next as a band, I'm just not willing to not speak about certain things. Yep. It's not really worth it to have the platform, to be given the opportunities, to like have the outreach, the connections or whatever, if we're not using it for something. So, but the other side of that is, I really think that it would have made me nervous to just feel like, oh, I can go and talk about what, I can go and do a podcast called Black People of Paramore, and I can go and talk about Black culture and what, when I'm not Black, I think I've always been really, really sensitive to the fact that I'm not trying to, you know, rise up and look like some sort of, you know, I'm not trying to make a show of it. And that's the line that I think is important to be aware of, because I want to, you know, it's fun for me to talk about a part of my life that's so personal to me and that has made its way into every part of my career, my friendships, all of it. But trying to be responsible with it and not abuse that as well is important to me.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I appreciate
these that. Are really interesting and nice questions to answer. It's really cool to talk about culture in this way, which does not happen in very many Paramore interviews.
Oh, I'm so happy that I'm able to give you this opportunity to talk openly about something I'm sure you don't have a ton of time talking about.
It's truly great. It's thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
That was it, y'all. That was it. That was my interview with Haley Williams from Paramore, the namesake of this here podcast. I just want to take a second to say thank you so much to the Frequency team over at Spotify. They facilitated this, and they are the reason that I was able to interview Haley. I am so grateful. Thank you, y'all. Secondly, please go check out the Patreon. It's new. You can find it in the show notes, or you can go to patreon.com/blackpeopleloveparamore. You'll find it there. I think that's really all I had. You can find me usually, as usual, all over social media at BPLPpod, or you can email me at blackpeopleloveparamore@gmail.com. That's it. See y'all next week. Bye.